the Great Lakes and New York waters bill.
Well, Tish, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I love sharing this idea with as many people as I can. You made that possible.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
The thrills continue here on KBOO as the Monday Sampler, starting April 14th at 2 p.m., will present throughout the rest of April episodes from The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles.
This is a love story. But don't worry, there's action in it. Arab chieftains, international gangsters, and a buried treasure.
Tune in Mondays, starting April 14th and throughout the month at 2 p.m. as the Monday Sampler presents Orson Welles in The Lives of Harry Lime.
But essentially, this is a tale about one of the times I fell in love. Now don't laugh. I'm not the first man that happened to, or the third man either.
It's The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles, starting April 14th at 2 p.m. on the Monday Sampler, right here on KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm a public school teacher. I host every second Monday of the month, normally with my co-host, Rachel Haynes, but she's not with us today. We typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Julia Bartow and Brian Zalber-Reed. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's start by just having you say a little bit about where you work and what you do as an educator. And you can go in whatever order you want to go in.
My name is Julia Bartow. I work in the Beaverton School District. I have been an educator for 15 years. I currently teach kindergarten, and it's my favorite grade to teach.
Oh, great.
My name is Brian Zalber-Reed, and I am currently over at the Salem Kaiser School District. I am a behavior intervention trainer and work with some of our most vulnerable students. It's amazing work.
Great. And Brian, if you can lean in a little bit more, just so we make sure that we hear you, you're good. Thank you. So maybe tell us a little bit, I always like to hear from our guests, what inspired you to do what you're doing right now as an educator. Sometimes people have stories about an educator when they were, you know, somebody that they had as a kid. Sometimes it has nothing to do with that. But what made you decide to go into education?
I started in education because early on in life, I just really loved to read. I would read all day, every day. And as I got older, something just clicked that there was a lot of power in reading and education. I felt a lot of doors were open to me because I was such an avid reader. And school made sense to me. And I wanted to make I felt an obligation and an excitement at the idea of teaching younger people literacy skills and also helping them open their world via books.
Great. And what about you, Brian?
Well, my roots come in from activism. It kind of started when I was doing, way back when, a lot of volunteer work, and I was doing a education grant on the Diné Reservation in, north of Kikots Movie on 3rd Mesa in Arizona. And I didn't realize what I was getting into, but I fell in love with it once I did. At the time, I was doing just a lot of work, activism work, and some good dear and near friends of mine were like, hey, you should come with us. You'd be really good at this. And I found out that I'm good at working with now students, especially in challenging environments, and getting them connected to resources. Got a part of my job now, and then the doors just kind of opened as I got older. It really started there, doing that. We were putting solar panels and windseeker windmills on hogans in the area. So this is before the internet. So students could do their homework at night, and then it just kind of became something else. And then 45 years later, here I am.
So, gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of activism, you are both involved in union work, doing different things. Talk about that. Maybe start with just what you're doing now or what positions you hold now. And then if you want to add anything about how you got started.
I am a member of my local executive board, and I also serve as an Oregon Education Association board director. And I was a member for as long as I could be a member, but I really got interested and more active in the union during the pandemic because I felt like things were just so bad. I kept hearing we had this really great, strong union. So I just thought I would say yes to every opportunity that came my way and hopefully try and figure out what we could do as a union and with the power of the people to make things better, and kind of been saying yes ever since to opportunities that came my way.
Great. What about you, Brian?
Well, it was just the natural course of my life, I guess you could say. Working with community organizations for most of my young adult and adult life. When I did start working for the school district, I just fell in love with it. And I saw kind of a need that, you know, in our union at the time, it was very low engagement. We're the second largest, apparently, but very low engagement. So me and a few others, we decided at our local to vote and to turn it into an organizing model union. That was the first step. And then so it just swallowed me up. It became an all-income, because I'm helping students and my staff and oddly enough, my community by what I do now. So right now I'm currently a OEA director, District 24 for Salem-Keizer, where I represent 2,900 people. I am a local director at large too, and what else? Well, last year's organizing chair when we were bargaining, and various just a lot of stuff. But the good part is I'm starting to give hats away because we're getting more engagement, so I don't have to wear them all anymore. So that's really good. I always used to joke around, say I had an antler, and I would just like put all these hats on it.
Right. Yeah, it is easy to get sort of caught up in wanting to do all of the things. And I think it's nice when we're able to pull back and sort of share the load more, right? I think that a lot of times we can struggle with that, right? We start to feel like we're the only ones that can really do the job right. And that's not healthy thinking, right? For a good, thriving union, we really need to be sharing in the load and looking to do that more and more. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And I don't know if either of you want to say anything more about that, but I feel like that sometimes that's a problem in the culture of our unions, either, you know, at the local level, certainly at the state level, and, you know, at the national level as well, is that there's this kind of, you know, it's sort of a gatekeeping is what it feels like. It may or may not be intentional, but it feels like there's this sort of like making it difficult for just rank and file regular members to really engage without having to first jump through a lot of hoops or, you know, hit a lot of roadblocks. What do y'all think about that?
I feel like I only started 4 or 5 years ago doing this, and I was so intimidated in the beginning. And so I had to kind of push myself through feeling like I didn't have the knowledge or I didn't belong in a lot of the spaces. I'm glad I said yes to all the different committees and all the different opportunities, because it helped me grow my knowledge and it helped me understand where there were maybe what the reasons were that maybe things weren't getting done as quickly. But now after 5 years, I feel like I have quite a bit of knowledge, and I would absolutely agree with everything you just stated. We tend to centralize, whether consciously or subconsciously, the knowledge, which means we're centralizing the power just to a few people. And we're looking to those people to solve everything, which is like the antithesis or the opposite of what an organizing union has to be, what a people-powered union is. And I think the more people are involved in a very specific way with relationship building, if you as a leader can go and build the relationships and find people to do the work that you've centralized to yourself, the stronger the union will be. It's very easy to maintain status quo and let things keep going as is. And I think that's how we end up in what I see, to be honest, in the locals and in Oregon overall, is just the same people doing the work. And it's really a hindrance because we don't get fresh perspective. We don't get fresh ideas. We don't get really anything new. We just maintain what is.
Yeah.
And I'm actually starting to step back and step down from some of these things. I don't want to exit completely, but I would really like to see more people stepping up and to also build the culture where we figure out how to help people who might feel intimidated, because that feels like a very recent memory to me.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't believe agree more. It's phenomenal. I know there's a good core group of us right now that all we at our local, that we're just, our whole mission is to get people excited and get involved. For I don't even know how long as anyone could remember, as the current employees anyway that haven't retired yet, it has always been a top-down local. Few mm-hmm. people, same ones, kind of just like a dryer cycle, and just kind of keeps recycling and recycling and recycling. And they'll say, you know, well, no one else wants to do it. Well, what I've been finding actually is no one has went out and asked. No one went out and said, hey, that's a cool idea. Have you thought about coming sharing that at the next, you know, representative assembly at our local? They're like, well, no, no one even asked me. I was like, well, it's free. Come on. And you even get a dinner, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I get a lot. I've been getting a lot of good, a lot of good people coming, starting to come in with fresh ideas, and our board has grown. We're right now in our locals elections, and we actually, I think, the first time in quite a while, have contested elections. I mean, I think elections in the past have been more of a just a rite of passage, like, you know, I get tap you on the shoulder and you can become VP, and then onward and upward you go. And so now it's actually, people are just kind of coming out and going, I'll run. And it's super exciting. And I know that I'm watching like that heartbeat of democracy just kind of coming alive in our local. And it is very exciting right now. I am so, so pumped.
Nice. And do you think the key to turning that around is just you got a core group of people who believe in the importance of that, or what do you think has been turning that around for your local?
Well, I'm a believer of your vibe will attract your tribe. So if you kind of live and as an example and do that, people will kind of gravitate to that. Just like angry people usually hang out with angry people and so forth and so on. So creating a welcoming space where you feel, one of our directors from Eugene, Brenda, was always say, yes, a safe space, but also a brave space where people can kind of come in and be authentic, and it's okay, and share your concerns, and you're safe. You're okay to share this. That is what I'm thinking that is starting to evolve at our local right now. And it is, I get chills. I don't know. It's really exciting.
Yeah. I think, you know, and the other thing that I think probably goes through the heads of leaders when they struggle with rank and file engagement is they worry that if they let go of the reins, so to speak, too much, then, you know, what happens if somebody, you know, does something that doesn't quite fit with the messaging, or doesn't, or maybe another member is unhappy with it or feels, you know, offended by it. Like they get worried that something might go wrong, which I understand, but they end up just not letting people do a whole lot, right? Because they get overly concerned with, well, something might go wrong, so we need to control it. You can join this committee, but you can't do such and such, and or form your own sort of group, or yeah.
Just like how learning how to walk, you got to fall down a couple times, and then next thing you know, you're running.
Right, yeah. You mentioned both of you are board directors. Can you say a little bit more about that? I think a lot of listeners don't necessarily understand what that structure is or what happens at the board, what the purpose of the board is. Can you say a little bit about that or what your experience has been being on the OEA board?
I was appointed to the board to finish out a term, and I feel like I haven't been on the board very long, about 2.5 years, and I will not be on the board again, not because I didn't enjoy it, but I will say the 2.5 years I was there, it was a huge learning curve to understand the role of a board member. And so in the beginning, I felt kind of drinking from a fire hose, just showing up and trying to hear what was going on or try and figure out what my role is. And now 2.5 years later, I've realized, wow, I can't believe we have this role unfilled. It is so important that we are informed at the state level about things that are going, about issues that are going on. What are the big takeaways? What's going on in each local that we connect over? I don't know that I see I wish I saw more collaboration between locals put together by the board and the board directors to solve problems. I think we're trying to go that way, but in my time there, it's just like a little bit slow. But our role is to, I don't know, I guess I'm still learning what my role is, but I know it's really important. Just that's a terrible answer. It's important, and the information that I have, that I feel like I'm the only person in all of my local that has this information besides my board director buddy. Like, everybody needs to know this. I think that really knowledge is power, and sometimes it worries me that there's so few people that have that knowledge, and I wonder, how do we get more knowledge out to more people in a more exciting way? Because a lot of people are like, that's dry, that's boring, nobody wants the position. It's actually really, really, really important. And we're in charge of the budget, which is also really, really, really important.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about how that information gets disseminated out to members, right? Out to our other members, because you can go and relay back to, you know, your executive, you know, your own executive board or Uniserv Council, right? You can share that, but then where does it go from there, right? Like, and there are questions about, you know, information overload and, you know, concerns about that. But yeah, how do we get that information out to people? Brian, what do you want to add in terms of your experience on the board?
Well, I definitely, we are a conduit of information. I found in my role from the state level, and sometimes depending upon what's going on, even national, when our national directors report to the board, and I bring all that information to my Uniserv Council and my executive team. Also, I found organizing members around certain important key issues is also kind of part of it. So working with my different committees, we have our comms is a very strong comms and organizing committee. So when we get information that is, like right now, funding is a hot topic, you know, so we're just starting to crank up. We also have our school board elections right now. We're getting ready to start SCIA, the teachers, the licensed staff just finished their interviews of the potential school board candidates, and we're going to do our endorsement interviews here. So there's a lot of things that from the state level that I can bring some solid questions to these people that when we interview them, are these people up to the task? And so being a director actually gives you that kind of high-end view of what your local needs to be successful and how to be more active to the OEA level, to the state level. It's mostly just moving information back and forth, I find, is the big chief thing, but how we use it is crucial. And then, of course, that's where I got my crash course on bylaws and Robert's Rules of Order. Yeah, it's amazing when you learn policy, how powerful that is, and how you can move. Any rank and file person can help productively move your local when you understand and fully encompass and embrace the policies. It's important stuff, and so we do a lot of work on that too as well.
Yeah, I guess I would just add too that I think our members don't know that there is a board, or they know that there's a board, but they don't understand what it's for, and they feel like our annual representative assembly is the only place for them to give input, and they don't realize that the board is another place where, I mean, we do business, we pass business at board meetings, and they can go to their board director and make a request for, you know, for a motion to be made or for a proposal to be made, right? So yep. I think we need to do a better job of just letting our members know that they can engage at the state level through our board and our board directors, and not just at the annual representative assembly that happens once a year, right?
Yeah.
We don't have a lot more time left. I wanted to get to a couple of just hot topics and see what your thoughts are. Response to Trump and his attacks on public education. Obviously, you know, he's been going after the Department of Education. He's been going after students, certainly at the college level, who are activists in support of Palestine. He's been, you know, at least talking about going after, you know, doing things, going after diversity, equity, and inclusion types of measures. So if you had to sort of summarize, or what do you think the union's role should be during this time? What should we be doing as a union? What kinds of things do you think we can do to protect our members, protect our students, protect our schools from these attacks?
You hit a good topic there. I think it's historically accurate. What's happening now is kind of just almost an obvious progression. Public sector unions have been a focus and under attack for years, probably decades. The fact that the first thing that Trump attacked was the federal workers and the unions there is just a sign. And you know how basically they right now, I think was what, 1 million workers now lost the right to bargain and collectively bargain. And that's coming, you know, that's what they're going to attempt to come. And I think at a state level, seeing that come, I would think that it would be prudent of us to kind of make sure we got our stuff together funding wise. I know what it was, 80 billion. It comes from the federal government for multiple reasons, through the education, Board of Education or Department of Education. So it's one of those things where I think as a state, we need to kind of look at how are we going to better take care of ourselves if all of that disconnects? What are we going to do? Right. That's kind of what I'm thinking of. And I know a lot of my members are, we have that discussion a lot, is what can we do to help push better funding and safety. I know our district stood out and said that we're going to become a sanctuary district, basically. So we're not going to be working with the federal government in any way. We're allowing them in our schools. And so that's how Salem Kaiser stood up and stood against it, as far as taking care of our first comers and our other community members, keeping them safe. There's so much to it. I wouldn't even know really where to start, other than I would say start with the funding. Maybe the kicker, look at that. I mean, there's a lot of money right there that's like money on the table that the state could put towards education. It's not that we don't have the money, it's just we need to refigure out how we use it.
Exactly. And you kind of got to my...
Yeah, I mean...
Go ahead, Julia.
Oh, I was just going to say it's such a huge topic. How do I even begin to talk about it? And it was interesting to hear Brian considering the money, because I actually went a totally different direction, which was kind of towards the beginning of the conversation when we talked about how we've kind of accidentally, maybe on purpose, kind of centralized power. And I think this is a big reflection point for people in leadership positions, because we cannot overcome this with a centralized power model. This has to be a model where we're bringing in every single member, even yes. if we're scared of, you know, there's a lot of fear, and fear is stopping the action. And that's kind of what concerns me. But I think also what gives me hope is the belief in relationships. So yeah, money's important, absolutely. But even more important, we need leaders in buildings. We need our leaders to be in the buildings. We need to be consistent. We need to continuously talk, and we need to have a plan. The time for a plan really has already passed and when we should have started. But we're talking, we have a national, we have a state, we have a local. There's so much power in that, but that power, I feel like, is the opposite of kinetic. Right now it's static. That power is kind of static, maybe waiting for direction. I don't feel like right now is the time to wait for a direction. Now is the time to like be big and be bold and maybe feel a little bit scared about what we're doing. And if we're not a little bit scared about what we're doing, and also hopeful, because we're talking to other people who are helping us feel brave, and we're coming up with plans and demanding things. I think that's what should be going on right now.
All right. Well, that's actually kind of a nice closing out for us, Julia. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the attacks from our own governor, but we'll save that for another episode. So thank you, Julia.
Please bring me back on for that episode.
Well, yeah, me too.
Okay. Thank you, both of you, for joining us on KBOO. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Stephen Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Willamette Week is seeking nominations for their annual Best of Portland Readers Poll, and we need your help to show Portland what KBOO means to this community. From now through noon on Friday, April 25th,